Welcome back to The New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts. So this is podcast 575, and in this podcast, we're going to talk about surviving Thanksgiving in podcast 575. Now, of course, in this podcast, I'm going to be telling some stories about traveling to Thanksgiving and Christmas and the holidays. And whenever I think about traveling, I think about xgovernmentcars.com because I originally bought my first Crown Vic from Ed Johnson at xgovernmentcars.com because I needed a car to drive down to Chicago every weekend. And I was going down there every weekend. My son was there, and I was going back and forth between Minneapolis and St. Paul and Chicago, and I got tired of people riding in the left lane. And so I thought, well, what do I need? And I decided that if I had an ex-cop car, then people would get out of my way. And they did, and it was great. And that was the first one that I got from xgovernmentcars.com. And then I had a black one, and I have the one I have now, which I've talked about. But the whole idea of these cars was I would make these speed runs down to Chicago, and I would make the speed runs to Virginia for Thanksgiving. And it always worked great, and they always ran great. I never really had any real problems with these cars because xgovernmentcars.com is Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. They're set up, they're maintained properly, and then it gets them all ready for you. So if you need a car, if you need a loan, if you have a job, you can get approved. They have great credit terms at X-Government Cars, and they take trades too. They pay the highest values without all the bull every day at xgovernmentcars.com. The other thing is they have the 3-day love it guarantee exclusively at xgovernmentcars.com. So here's what you do. Check out their selection online at xgovernmentcars.com or get your butt down to X-Government Cars. They're now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North, or you can check them out old school by calling them at 763-777-8782.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Well, I have been restless lately, and I remember when I was a little kid, the general manager of the Bob Davis Podcasts, of course, she wasn't the general manager of the Bob Davis Podcasts then, but she is now. My mom told me I would go up and I would say, "What can I do? What can I do?" And she would suggest a bunch of things for me to do. And of course, I wouldn't like any of them. And then I would say, there's nothing I can do. There's nothing to do. And then she would say, first of all, go outside and run around. And then I would go do that. If it was too late at night, then she would just say, why don't you go do something creative? What? What should I do? Anything. Go write a story, go paint a picture, make something, whatever. Well, I'm in that position right now. I'm sick of politics. I've watched everything you can watch on television, and I'm down to the Holocaust on Netflix, which actually, there's two or three really good documentaries about it, and I've been watching those, but it's like, oh my God, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm watching the Holocaust. This is depressing. So now I feel like I don't want to watch television, but I also don't want to do a podcast because there's been so many political podcasts, and there's so much to talk about with politics because all my friends are calling me, and they're pulling me back in to talk about politics. And the thing is, when I was traveling, at least I could drive somewhere. I could just get in the driver's seat and drive another 50 or 60 miles to Baton Rouge or something and a truck stop, and I could stay there. But now I'm stuck here, and I'm stuck just being restless because, as I said, I don't want to talk about politics because there's really nothing to talk about. Why do I say that? Well, I mean, I'm not trying to suggest to people who are political junkies that nothing is happening. Yes, there's things happening, and I suppose there's things to talk about. But in my opinion, they're not salient and they're not worth analysis. That is, they have the feel of things that we will not be talking about tomorrow, a week from now, or a year from now. People are making fools of themselves, to be quite honest, whether it's the cast of a Broadway play, a bunch of Trump supporters at an alt-right meeting, Kanye West. People are making fools of themselves in media, still trying to tell you what is going to happen and being wrong, of course. In politics, on Facebook, people feeling the need to post a missive about the latest outrage either way. And I just feel sorry for you if you felt the need to post stuff on Facebook about whatever. The truth is, we're going to have to wait until the new administration takes office, and then we will have something to talk about. Until then, there's really nothing to say. And as we used to remark in radio, usually about this time of the year, and it would always come up and it would always be a big surprise. And that is that there's a period of time, usually starting with Thanksgiving. It usually starts right before Thanksgiving, and that continues all the way through the holiday season, all the way to New Year's. There's this holiday period in which it's just dead, and it is the worst time to be on the air, because no matter what you do, you can't get anything going, and of course nothing happens because everyone's on vacation, and it's the weekend crew that's on Monday through Friday, and it's the that's true at the TV stations, and it's true in the government, and it's true everywhere else. Everyone is going to take time off to get ready for whether it's the transition or something else. And, you know, I don't think much is going to happen. Now, of course, if it does, then we'll talk about it. But what we end up doing in this country is we end up compressing months of stress and living into a month. We take, you know, literally things that would take a month, months to play out. We press it into a 2 or 3 week period between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And then a little bit of the pressure is off on New Year's Eve, but it really doesn't end until New Year's Eve. And no wonder people get drunk and crazy on New Year's Eve, because by that time, they've just about had it with the whole thing. Well, the good news is I don't have to be on the air, and I don't have to do a podcast. And I was trying to figure out what I wanted to talk about that didn't end up in some kind of political analysis that nobody needs to hear right now, and that will be relatively forgettable, just because, you know, it's all over but the shouting, and the shouting doesn't start until after the new president is inaugurated sometime in the first couple of weeks of January. So what ends up happening is the only people left in the room are the freaked out, weird political junkies. People on cable TV and talk radio have to play to these people, and this is what happens. It's just sad. What I see are a lot of people who just can't let go. They have been aroused, they have been engaged, and they have been super excited about the election, unless their candidate lost, and even if their candidate lost, and they can't let go. And it was funny because I've, you know, obviously been having dinner with friends, some people who ran for office and some people who didn't, and some people who are politically involved and some people aren't. And one of the comments was, what's the big deal? You know, why are people, I have to decompress. I can't take any more of this. And the comment was, you know, these saps need to suck it in and move on. What's the big deal? You know, we were laughing about it because we can certainly see it from their point of view. But yeah, this inability to disengage ends up being a recipe for disaster during the holidays. And so I want to talk about surviving Thanksgiving as a way of kind of literally decompressing from the political scene a little bit. But I think it does have some connection to the political scene, especially if you're a political junkie. Because what happens at Thanksgiving is it ends up setting the tone for everything that happens from the 26th of November on through the first of the year. And if you do something silly like yell at grandma on Thanksgiving, that's going to be remembered for at least 2 or 3 months and maybe the rest of the year. And you don't want to be put in a position where you end up in a fight with Uncle Joe or grandma or your sister or your mom and dad or your cousins or your nieces and nephews and old family friends. It's best to just let that stuff go. And I've certainly been an aggressor. I've certainly made that mistake and had to patch up relationships, you know, over the next few months and the rest of the year. If you lose your footing on Thanksgiving, then you're in it for the rest of the season. You're in the you-know-what the rest of the season. Sometimes the fights start Thanksgiving, and those fights can last years, and we don't want to do that. So the first thing that we need to do is give ourselves some permission to set some ground rules for ourselves, not for other people, but ourselves. And so I'm going to give you my little recipe for ground rules that can be set that hopefully will result in, a better holiday season, especially if you're a political junkie. First of all, it's nice that we have a holiday in this country set aside just to give thanks for our blessings and to spend with our families. And it's nice you know, that it's just that, except it isn't just that. It has turned into a grand mal seizure. It has turned into a grand mal seizure that starts Thanksgiving and you don't come out of it until the first of the year. Because it starts with, I guess I should say, it's nice that we have a day in this country that's devoted to, completely devoted to eating, shopping, and football and arguing. But it's not supposed to be that, I guess. I don't know what it is supposed to be. Historically, I learned tonight, because I did a little research, and I'll put links up in the blog that I write for each podcast, that there were various Thanksgiving holidays celebrated at various times in the 16th and 17th centuries in this country before the Pilgrims. Pilgrims and Indians, of course, is the famous one. That's the one we were all taught in social studies in 1621 at Plymouth. This little celebration that they had lasted 3 days. There were 90 people there. They were all Protestants, so I don't know how much alcohol was consumed. Probably not that much, or it would have ended up being a massacre. And then as time went on, various presidents, starting with George Washington, would set aside usually the last Thursday in November or the second to last Thursday in November each year for this Thanksgiving thing. And it didn't actually become a national holiday until the Civil War. Abe Lincoln made it a national holiday because the Civil War was so depressing. And then Roosevelt switched it to the fourth Thursday because I think in whatever it was, 1933 or whenever it was, there were five Thursdays. And so he decided to make it the fourth Thursday, which would give everybody more time to shop, which he thought would be a help for commerce at the height of depression. And, you know, as I'm saying this, I'm thinking about all of the flack that George W. Bush took when he told everybody to go out and shop. And that's what Roosevelt was basically saying by declaring the fourth Tuesday, the fourth Thursday of the month, Thanksgiving. Okay, I something to that effect. And I don't quote me. Just look it up yourself. I'll put the links up. My favorite holiday is not Thanksgiving or Christmas. My favorite holiday is the 4th of July. Why? Well, first of all, it's warm. Second of all, there are no requirements. You get flags. You get to grill. Nobody cares where you go. If you don't come to the family celebration and you go to your friend's party in the field with the bonfire and the girls, it's great. Nobody really cares too much. And most people don't care too much about drinking or drinking too much beer because everyone is drinking beer. And if you don't drink, the people I hang out with on the 4th really don't. So we just make a huge pot of coffee and hang out. And nobody really talks about politics because it's the summer and it's perfect and it's that beautiful, you know, air in the tree, the wind in the trees and the water glistening in the distance. And it's 70, 80 degrees. And then, of course, there are fireworks. And who doesn't want to go to fireworks, right? So the 4th of July is the best holiday in the world. It's certainly the best holiday in the United States. And Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's are not the 4th of July. Now, New Year's Eve is a close second to the 4th of July because it's just a fun, hey, let's celebrate the new year. But it is a pain in the ass because you usually have to make arrangements if you want to go out. And if you don't have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, you know, I'm speaking for myself on the girlfriend thing, it's really no fun because you don't go out, you know, on New Year's Eve by yourself. It really doesn't work. Some people, I'm sure, do. I suppose if you're young, you do. But New Year's Eve has always been difficult for me because it's, you know, where do you go and what do you do and whatever. Thanksgiving's a little different. I remember being young and Thanksgiving, you know, kids would just get in cars and drive around. And so you'd come up to a four-way stop and you'd see a bunch of you'd see another car and it would be another bunch of kids because we would have to leave. We'd leave the house, get in the cars, and we'd just drive around and everything was closed. Even the White Hen Pantry was closed. So we just couldn't do anything or go anywhere because everything was closed. It isn't like that anymore. There's always something open, but really everything's closed. So that's why you see teenagers and young adults just driving around aimlessly because they're just refugees from the insanity of the holidays. Usually it starts on Thanksgiving. So no, I am not a fan of the holidays through Thanksgiving. And I think the main reason is the high expectations that people have. First of all, it's fall. It's usually dark early, and that is depressing. It's cold. That is depressing, even though it's crisp. You know, you could say, well, it's crisp, but not in Minnesota. It's not New England. It's probably going to be cold and sleeting, and that's always, ugh, you know. Sometimes you get a snowstorm on Thanksgiving, and I guess that's exciting. I don't know, but... you know, I kind of think nobody's really thankful that much for anything because they're just going, ugh, we have to deal with this weather now for the next 6 months. And everybody's going to send me notes saying, you know, it's great. The winters here are great. And everything. No, it's not. They're not great. And they're great when you're 22, but they're not great when, you know, you reach a certain point in your life because it's just cold all the time. And then, you know, Uncle Joe gets drunk and starts attacking your little cousin because she voted for Hillary or vice versa, and people are yelling and screaming, and sometimes the police get called, although that never happened with my family. And in the end, people are unhappy, and it has to do with expectations. And my family and the general manager of the Bob Davis podcast will kill me for saying this, but we just ended up having arguments on Thanksgiving. And usually we would go up to our friends, the McLeod's house. They lived in Palatine, and I don't recall them coming to our house. I guess they did a couple times, and I just as I speak, I can't recall too many. I guess we had Thanksgiving at our house a bunch of times, but I don't remember them because they're probably blotted out of my memory. I've blocked them. So I don't know if you've ever had a plumbing emergency at Thanksgiving, but I have. We had the pipes break once when it was really cold, and of course we had to call a plumber. And I remember I opened the door and there was water pouring down like a waterfall into the entryway, and it was just like, oh no, what do I do? Like the first thing was like, well, what do I do? And it was, you got to turn the water off, and I didn't even know where it was, and it was a mess. So if you have emergency service needs, think about Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business all winter. But when it comes to keeping all these systems in your house running right, especially as we head into winter, you can still get them out to check your heating systems, to check your water heater, to make sure everything is up and running for winter. So do it. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Reliable service and quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. You know, quality is really important. A lot of plumbers are out there pushing price, and price is important too, and Ryan competes on price, but you want it done right, and that is why you call Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They go back four generations in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Residential and business emergency service. And when they're around, ask them about improving the efficiency of your heating system for home or business or getting high efficiency heat. It's not cheap, but if you can afford to do it now, it will save you tons of money in the future. Once again, Ryan Plumbing and Heating, metro wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs too, for four generations. In Minneapolis, you can call 612-927-6488. In St. Paul, 651-224-4771. Online at ryanplumbing.com. But we would go to the McLeods, and my sister and I would have a lot of fun at the McLeods because they had a couple of kids that were our age, and we did stuff, and we had some fun. But the main reason was Don McLeod, because Don and Phyllis could drink anybody under the table. And I don't know how they did it, but they did. Don McLeod could sit there and drink martinis and be absolutely stone-faced. And, you know, he could carry on a conversation. And, of course, Phyllis. And sometimes we would even get dinner started. Like, we would be eating at midnight. I mean, that's how much fun they were. And, of course, in those days, everybody smoked. You walked in the house and you smelled that delicious smell of turkey dinner being cooked at 10:30 p.m. and cigarettes and alcohol and perfume. You know, I love that smell. So we always had a good time. But my dad was not Don McLeod when it came to holding his liquor. And he'd have a couple of martinis, and he would fall asleep on the couch, on their Mediterranean couch, and you could not get him up to save your life. And usually it was after dinner, where Don would sit at the table, we'd play cards, or we would, you know, we'd be having coffee by then, and he'd be drinking his 14th martini. And my sister and their daughter and their son would be at the table, and we'd be laughing and telling stories and playing cards and stuff like that. And my dad would be snoring on the couch, and my mom would be furious. serious. And so the next couple of hours with my mom trying to get my dad to get up, and it would be like 2 o'clock in the morning. And of course, we loved it because we loved it, but he would not wake up. And then she would have to drive home because he could not deal with the fact that Don could drink anybody under the table. And there were a few really fun Thanksgivings at the McLeods. I know we had some fun Thanksgivings at our house, but I don't remember any of them. I'm sorry, Mom. So I guess what I would do is offer my suggestions on how to set it up so that it ends up being a good holiday. And I would say that the first thing, the very first thing that we have to do is we have to set a time limit. And that is that you can only stay for a few hours because you have to get back to whatever. And if you have to make something up, make something up. And this is especially true if you're driving across the country or up north or whatever. If you, you know, and I've made this mistake more than once where I've decided to stay the whole week and it ends up being a disaster because everyone's expectations are way, way up in the air. Last 2 years ago, my sister said, I want you to cook Thanksgiving dinner. I want you to come to my house and cook Thanksgiving dinner. Well, I was very excited, and I took the bait, and I went down there, and I spent a week, and I was going to cook Thanksgiving dinner. And it turned into a disaster because she wouldn't just let me. I kept saying, just go in there and, you know. And, of course, everybody in my family is very stubborn, so she wouldn't do that. And it was just so irritating because everything I did, she had to intervene. And then her friend every year brings a turkey from, well, it's a store called Ucrops down in Virginia. And she told her, don't bring that turkey because we're making one here. And she brought the turkey. And I was really ticked off because I had invested then. I was making the, you know, the fresh mashed potatoes. And I was making green beans with bacon and everything. And I mean, I had a whole thing planned and I didn't get to do any of it because everyone was, I don't know, whatever happened. So I violated my own rule of basically saying I can only stay for 24 hours. Because if you stay too long or if you agree to do something where you don't have any control, you're in for it, okay? Because everyone's expectations are very, very high, okay? So you have to set a time limit. And you just have to say, we have to get back. We can't stay. Two, do not drink. No, don't even have a beer. Tell them you have a heart condition or something. Just don't. If you're an alcoholic yourself, especially, do not drink. But if you are an alcoholic and you're not drinking, get something in your hand right away, like a Coke, so that your brother-in-law doesn't force you to drink with him. Come on, have a drink. You just don't do that. So the first thing to do is if you are a recovering alcoholic, get something in your hand right away so that they don't, you know, either hand you a gin and tonic and make you drink it, ha ha ha, or you know, do something like that. The third thing, I came up with this, I think this is funny, and it's really hard for me because I take everything so seriously. You have to ignore everything. You have to be like the guy who's been in prison for 40 years and just ignore, or the guy who's, you know, battle-hardened veteran where nothing means anything, because you'll just be killed by the insults and the jabs and the derogatory remarks, which are designed to get your dander up. And especially in Minnesota, you know, or in the Midwest, these remarks are, watch this, I'll say this, and then he'll get really upset. Things like, there's no way Green Bay is going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't even know if they play the Chiefs, but you know what I mean. Or saying the Vikings are not going to win this weekend because blah, 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 blah. Or, I saw your brother on Skid Row last week. Or, you know, you married the wrong girl. Or, who's this? Or some ridiculous thing. You just have to ignore it, whatever it is. And it is going to be difficult because parents, older brothers and sisters, uncles, they can push every button that you've got and they are going to trigger a response. And that is why they do it. Fifth, I hate to say this, but I say it to myself and I suppose it should be the first thing, but it isn't. Be thankful. Be thankful that you are alive. You need to practice the attitude of gratitude. Just constantly remind yourself that you're alive. Be thankful that your sweet Aunt Altie is still alive and can sit next to you because she may not be there next year. Here's another one. Six, ration it out. I made these up, by the way. I didn't get this from some list. These are mine. So if you got a problem with it, I'm the guy to talk to. Some years you should find reasons to stay away. First of all, I think it helps with the family. if sometimes you just don't show up because, you know, hey, we can't make it this year because whatever, because then they'll appreciate you being there next year. I think it's a good, if you just go every year, then especially when you start dredging up the stuff from last year, that's when it's probably a good idea not to go again. Just give it a couple of years rest or a year and go do something else. Here's another one. I love this. Bring a hostage. That's right. Bring a hostage. Your friend down the hall who doesn't have anywhere to go. That would be me. Your on and off girlfriend who is unsuspecting and innocent and doesn't know what she's getting herself into. You can invite a hostage. You can invite someone to come over to your families. And I've been invited. So I am going to be the hostage at another family gathering I'm looking forward to. It's going to be a lot of fun. Eighth, and I think finally, do not talk politics if you can't just keep it on the surface. By that I say if you're going to get engaged in arguing with someone about it, like why Trump is a great guy or why Hillary Clinton should be president or why Gary Johnson should have won or whatever weird thing that you've got, don't do it because you're going to regret it because you're going to upset people and then they're going to be mad and then you're going to hear about it for the next month and a half and you're certainly going to hear about it next year when you go back and Trump, you know, cut somebody's arm off and threw him in the river or, you know, started a war. Well, yeah, you were the guy that wanted Trump, you know, and then you're going to have to deal with that. Or when, I don't know, whatever the president's name is, whatever happens, when you put yourself in a position where you have to defend that person, then they're going to stick you with that hardcore at the next Thanksgiving. Now, if you don't care, then you're going to be the guy that started the war. You know, well, you know, if you hadn't come in here and started talking about North Korea, then this wouldn't have happened. And this one, by the way, everyone disobeys, but you have to know when to disengage and walk away. And most, I can't. And if I start it, I can't walk away. So I have to be really careful of what I say. And in general, most of the time with families, there's usually pieces of the family that don't agree with other pieces of the family. So brothers gang up against cousins and things like that. So if you're going to talk about politics, then hopefully the whole family is political and they understand that we're talking policy. You know, we used to sit in the basement at my grandfather's and my mom and dad talked about, and you know, they would have knockdown drag out fights that just went on forever. And people would say to my grandfather, "But why are you having these arguments with your son?" And usually it was about the food business because they were in the food business. And, you know, it would be, you know, "Fred Harvey didn't do that. You don't know what you're talking about." And my dad would go, "Oh, for God's sakes, Dad, that wasn't Fred Harvey. That was Cammie Jones that did that. You're crazy." Or, you know, "You can't put salt in tomatoes and leave them in a can," or some ridiculous thing. And it would go on forever. And then my grandfather would always say, "We're not arguing. We're solving the world's problems." So this stuff goes back, and this was in the 40s when they did this. So this goes back. I wasn't there, by the way, but this is the story that I hear. This is something that goes back. Now, my grandfather did a lot of other stuff that, you know, goes a lot deeper than arguing about politics. But, you know, he was quite a character, and he, you know, my father's father, my mom's dad was a really fun guy and a great guy because I think he had some life experience, three wars and everything else. And I think he knew how to disengage from that kind of stuff. But my grandfather was, you know, not someone who could disengage from an argument. And he would fight you all day long. And it would end with him, you know, either whacking you or it would end with you being told you were being disrespectful or some negative thing. So I'm sure it wasn't always we're solving the world's problems. I'm sure sometimes it was not very very enjoyable for the people that didn't necessarily want to hear all that arguing. And honestly, I didn't learn that until I got married and realized that there are families that don't do that. You know, they have other things that they do, but they don't have knockdown dragout fights at the dinner table, which is what we did my whole life. I thought that was normal, and I was shocked to be in a family that didn't have knockdown dragout fights at the dinner table. So as I said, I think we can talk politics as long as we stay above the fray. And if we can't, we shouldn't. Now, for political junkies like myself, you know, your family's going to know that you're a political junkie. And they're going to say stuff specifically designed to upset you because that's what we do in Minnesota. We say things to be, well, you know, if Hillary Clinton had won, everything would be just fine. And they say it not because they believe it. They say it because they want to upset you and they want to watch you. They want to spin you up. So watch out for that. Okay, one more. And this is a big one. Leave early. You do not have to stay all night. Your wife does not have to help clean every dish. You do not have to sit there and nod off watching the fourth football game. That's what gets me when everyone ends up in the living room watching the football game, because to me, sports on television is probably the most... I would rather watch a Holocaust documentary than watch a football game. It's the most boring thing I've ever seen in my life. And literally, it takes me 30 seconds to sit down in a chair, even if I've had a pot of coffee, and start watching a football game, I will fall asleep within seconds. So you have to do whatever it takes to get out of there or go figure out something else to do so you don't end up doing something that's going to make you feel bad. Or they'll just, if they leave you alone and you want to sleep while the football game's on, great. So this is where you, whatever it takes. The kid is sick. The house was broken into. I have to work in the morning. You know, I don't feel good. Whatever it takes to get out of there. Even a possibility of saying that you have to go to yoga is a good way to get out if you have to. Although I don't know that I'd want to practice yoga after eating Thanksgiving dinner. And I do know that they are having yoga classes before Thanksgiving dinner on Thanksgiving. But it doesn't matter what you do for exercise. As you know, I talk about yoga a lot. I practice yoga. I love hot yoga. A lot of Minnesotans don't, but when it gets cold, it's great. But you're in these rooms where it's over 100 degrees. There's lots of people. You're sweating a lot, and you can get dehydrated even if you drink a lot of water, which is why I use this stuff called Hydrus. H-Y-D-R-U-S. Hydrus transformed my yoga practice. I talk about it all the time. But the thing is, it doesn't matter what you do, whether it's CrossFit or cycling or lifting or competitive sports. People use it when they're hunting. Wrestlers use it. Runners use it, because what happens is if you drink water, you generally don't get hydrated that fast and you still don't get electrolytes into your muscles. Hydrus does that, and it does it very efficiently and very, very quickly. It uses exclusive nanosome technology to get critical electrolytes into your muscles with unrivaled speed and effectiveness. And there's no sugar in traditional, like they have in traditional sports drinks. So it's very effective for that. And somebody asked me, well, what's in it? And it's basically the same material that your cells use that's part of your cells. So it's very effective. And then there's stevia in it that sweetens it. That's pretty much the only thing. And so you mix the Hydrus into 16.7 ounces of water, and then you can drink it before, after, and during exercise, and it will help you take it to the edge. And that's what it's all about, because I can practice at the edge of my yoga practice. And I've been doing yoga like 8 days straight now. And I'm doing it because, of course, I'm going to take Thanksgiving off. And I can practice at a high level, and I'm not sore all the time. I get up in the morning, and I'm like, wow, I don't feel sore. And it's because of Hydrus. Took me a while to get it built back up into my system, but now I'm rolling, and I'm super excited, and I really believe in this product. Join the performance hydration revolution. Here's what you do. Visit HydrusPerformance.com. That's HydrusPerformance.com. H-Y-D-R-U-S. HydrusPerformance.com. But you can give thanks in any way that you choose. Just being grateful to be alive is one of those things. And I certainly can connect with that experience because I got hit by a car. You know, it wasn't Thanksgiving, but it was in the midst of the holiday season. And why did I get hit by a car? Because I was going to do something that I felt compelled to do that I did not have to do, but I did anyway. And on the way back, I spun out, got out, walked down the highway, and got hit by a car. So for me, Thanksgiving is being happy that I am not maimed or dead, because that was a year when I almost got killed twice, 2-3 times, I almost got killed. So it was weird that I survived that whole period of time. I do not think the holiday season is the most wonderful time of the year. Some people do, and God love them, you know, that they actually, it makes them feel warm and happy, and they love it, and they want everyone to be happy, and they just want to help you be happy. I don't like it. I don't like Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's for me is a big, giant relief. To me, it's a month of pure hell, although now in my life, I don't I don't worry about it anymore because I don't practice this thing where it's very, I ration out my exposure to the holidays very carefully. I don't have to, I'm not married anymore, so I don't have to put up Christmas. There's virtually no Christmas decorations in my house. There won't be, I completely disengage from the whole season. And I'll tell you shortly here what I do. There's only one thing that I do, and it's only one thing that I actually insist on every Christmas, which has created its own little problem, but I do it anyway, because I felt that I had to come up with something for my family to do that I do. But anyway, if you disengage and do only what you can do to celebrate and not judge other people, as I am doing right now in terms of their celebration, then it can be pretty good. I think making a ceremony that actually has some meaning is a huge thing, and I've seen families do that, and it has always touched me when somebody actually does something where, for example, everybody has to say why they're thankful for Uncle Joe. And now I'm Uncle Joe. So I'm the one that everyone's like, yeah, he drives us crazy, but, you know, whatever. And it's nice to experience that. It's important to tell people how much you love them and how much you appreciate them, because so much of our society is so harsh that just telling people that you appreciate them kind of takes the sting out of all of it, because they're doing it so that you can feel that level of appreciation. Especially women do this stuff because they want to have a nice dinner. They don't want to have people fight. Now, of course, if your family is one of these families that just fights and argues and bitches and people get drunk and the police are called, don't go. Just don't go. And as I said before, I alternate. Now, nobody ever called the police in my family. We never had that problem. But there was, and there is, always a lot of fussing and fighting and disappointment and anger and frustration because of expectations. The people want it to be this really great time. And my family is a very intense bunch. And it's like, I remember when I tried to cook Thanksgiving dinner with my sister just recently, it was just a bad year and it was not good. But there was a time when I was married, when my wife's family, and I usually go to Thanksgiving with them, and she doesn't even go. She's in Los Angeles and I end up going to Thanksgiving. Not this year, but, you know, it's just weird. But I remember when we lived in New Jersey, I was really excited because we had we bought a house and we were living in, when it was, we had lived in an apartment for, and it was just, I wanted to cook Thanksgiving dinner. So her family came to New Jersey. So they flew out from Minnesota, came to New Jersey, did some stuff in New York, came to the house, and I was going to cook Thanksgiving dinner. And the night before, I wanted to put the turkey in. And it was a giant turkey too, because there's a bunch of them. There's like 12 or 13 of them. And my mom said, oh, you don't need to put that turkey in now. You can put this in. You can put the turkey in when you wake up tomorrow. Well, you know, it's a family that they like to eat at 4:30 p.m. on Thanksgiving. And I didn't put the turkey in until, like, I don't know, 1 o'clock or something. If I'd have put it in the night before, it would have been done. And but because of the advice that I received from the general manager of the Bob Davis podcast, she is going to kill me. I said, I'll wait. And I waited, and the thing, it wasn't done, and we didn't eat it. Now, for the Davises, that was no problem. Like, you know, we think, remember of Phyllis and Don, we would eat at 10:30. We would eat, sometimes we'd go up there in the summer and we wouldn't eat till like midnight. She made steaks once that were so thick, it took forever for them to cook on the grill. And she was yelling at Don the whole time, but we were all partying and having fun. But for my ex-wife's family, that was not okay. They wanted to eat at 5 o'clock, and I went crazy. I was so stressed out. But I did make the mashed potatoes and the green beans and everything else. So we did figure out a way. We ended up carving the turkey and then put it in the microwave and getting it out. But it's really hard to get Thanksgiving dinner out in one piece. And if you have a complex dinner, so if you got the 7-layer salad and the green beans and the dressing and all that stuff, you know, it's really hard to pull everything together and get that meal out. And I almost decided to cook Thanksgiving dinner for myself. Some people are doing what they call Friendsgiving, where they have friends over and they have Thanksgiving with friends, which I think is really great. I would like to do that someday, but it's really a challenge to get everything out. And of course, when I cook, I like to have everything cleaned up when it's done. Like, I want that I want the kitchen to look like it hasn't even been cooked in when I'm finished. So if that means I have to clean the oven, then I have to clean the oven. Like, I refuse to have a dirty kitchen, because when the plates come back, I want them cleaned up, stacked up, done, and I don't want a big, dirty kitchen that's just looks like a hurricane hit it, you know, after Thanksgiving dinner. And that creates a lot of problems, because you have to clean up as you go along, and each thing has to be processed, and it's quite a chore to get all that stuff to come out at the same time. Now, if you do have this issue, the other thing you can do is you can consider flying to another city where no one you know lives and stay in a hotel. And guess what? You can have Thanksgiving dinner in the hotel restaurant. Almost all of them serve a Thanksgiving dinner. And that's another thing we used to do, is we used to go to San Francisco or Boston or someplace like that for Thanksgiving dinner. And it was really great. That was a really fun thing to do, because usually they're really excited that you're there, especially if it's a big family, because there's nobody else in the restaurant because everyone else is having dinner at home. So you get a great rate on the room, and you get a great rate on Thanksgiving dinner. So, and by the way, I think that also goes for Christmas, which is way overblown. And as far as traditions are concerned, I told you I would tell you this. So now I have my own tradition with my nephews and my son. Now what I do on Thanksgiving, I'm sorry, Christmas Day. Now we're talking about Christmas. And for a long time, I got so frustrated because I didn't really have anything. So you'd go from one thing to the next. Big families, somebody's always doing something. Hey, come over. We're going to have, you know, eggnog, or come over on Christmas Eve, or we're going to go to church and then we're going to whatever, or we're doing this and we're doing that. And it's like, And you go, and then you feel bad because you don't do anything, right? So I said, I'm going to start taking my nephews out, and my niece, if she wants to come, my nieces, out to Christmas. So Christmas Day, after it's all over with, right? People don't know this, but all the Chinese restaurants open up at 3 p.m. on Christmas Day. And so I go to Chinese restaurants on Christmas Day after, you know, so we have Christmas dinner late at a Chinese restaurant with people who aren't Christians, you know, people of different faiths who don't know what to do on Christmas because they're Jewish or whatever. They don't celebrate Christmas, you know, or if they do, it's just they put a tree up and they give out presents, or they're actually celebrating Hanukkah. So they're not celebrating Hanukkah on Christmas Day. Anyway, I don't want to get into that because I'm going to offend people. I'm just saying, they always go out for Christmas dinner at a Chinese restaurant. And so we started doing that, and it's really fun. And I am forcing them into this every year now because I want this to be my little tradition. And if you have traditions and if you give thanks to people that are important in your life, then you can have a wonderful time, and that's great. But it certainly is no surprise to anyone if I say we live in a society that blows everything out of proportion, and boy, does it. The first Thanksgivings were just people glad to survive because they didn't die of some disease or break a leg and whatever. Pilgrims, you know, the people in Berkeley, Virginia, you know, settlements in the colonies, which were like being on the moon, you know. They almost didn't make it that first year. You know, many didn't. And of course, they didn't have Black Friday shopping afterwards, and they didn't have the Rose Bowl or whatever. They came for 3 days to offer their genuine thanks to the people that helped them and to God, and to be grateful to be alive. And I can't emphasize that enough. That was what the first Thanksgivings were. They weren't preparations for, you know, Black Friday shopping or the football games. And of course, the first Christmases were also simple affairs, because in the Catholic Church, the big holiday is Easter, which I learned, unfortunately, to my chagrin, or at least my own injury, when I thought the most important holiday in the Catholic Church was Christmas. No, it is Easter. People might have exchanged small gifts at Christmas, but we have turned Christmas into an orgy of candy and flat-screen TVs, rivaled only by Halloween. So you got to do with Christmas what you do with Thanksgiving. You know, you have to temper your expectations, try to come up with some kind of important ceremony that makes people feel grateful and happy, and go on. And sometimes it's difficult. But the other thing is the perfect dinner thing, where I talked about getting it all out on time and things. The thing is, you can order dinner out, and a lot of people do. I think it was last year I ended up in Wisconsin with my ex-wife's family, and you know, I was eating something. I was like, God, this is really good. Did you make these or something? And Margie was like, my sister-in-law was like, no, we bought that at Byerly's. And I was like, what? She goes, we bought the whole dinner at Byerly's, Bob. I'm not going to cook Thanksgiving dinner. And I was like, this is amazing. This is so good. I couldn't believe it. So yeah, you can order it out. And I guess people know that. I mean, I don't have to tell people that, but they're probably out there going, you know, what are you, where have you been? What rock did you crawl out from under? And of course, you can also have other people come over and make it. And by the way, I have to give kudos to my sister because this is what she's doing. She was invited to a Thanksgiving dinner, and the people that were going to invite her over to Thanksgiving dinner were going to move into a new house, but it's not ready. So they were like, what are we going to do? Because we can't have guests at our little house. Our newer house is bigger and blah, 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 blah. So my sister said, well, why don't you come over to my house and just make Thanksgiving dinner, which she's doing the same thing to them that she did to me. But the good news with people that are just friends, you don't cross the line. Like when it's family, you will say anything. There are no holds barred. So I'm sure she's going to have a great time because she's going to have a house full of kids. And if she stays out of the kitchen, she'll be fine. In fact, she'll probably have the time of her life. So no, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to give thanks. You don't have to feel thankful. You know, you can go to the casino all day and have a great time. You can go to a movie theater and watch movies all day, or you can just sleep the entire day. You do not have to serve Thanksgiving dinner to the homeless. That one drives me crazy. And if you do, God bless you. But if you feel that you do it because you have to, then you should check yourself, because you don't have to do that. You don't have to be a saint unless that's your idea of a great time. Now, it can be the day that is the on-ramp to family strife and insanity that lasts, you know, all season and perhaps for the next, you know, all year. But it doesn't have to be. You know, so here I'm going to give you some topic starters for people who insist on talking politics at the table. And I think it's pretty, these are pretty funny. So what you do is when they start in, you wait a minute and then you go, hey, did you hear about the people who live inside the earth, the hollow earth people? And there's a whole theory on the hollow earth that there is an alien race living in the hollow earth. The earth is hollow. They've been down there for centuries. They're super advanced. That's where all the UFOs come from. Just go on YouTube and type in hollow earth in the search window and you're going to get the phone book. You're going to get every video ever made and they will entertain you for hours. The other one is the Trumpets of Gabriel. This is another one that I love, and especially if they're religious, this will really get them going. So the Trumpets of Gabriel, if you go online, I think I did a podcast about this at one point because it was in the Conspiracy Theory podcast. If you go online and you search the Trumpets of Gabriel, most of them will be YouTube videos, and it's this weird sound that nobody knows what the origin is, what it is, or how it's working, and it's usually video, and it's usually some Russians on a balcony, you know, in St. Petersburg, or it's a kid in a field in Alabama, or it's a guy in his front yard, and it's this thing that goes, oh, and it's super loud, and everyone, now, here's the deal. What happened was this is the way these things have been done. Somebody recorded this sound, and then what they do is they play it on their phone, and then they stand behind the phone with another phone and video and go, what's that? What's that? What's that? But it's a great conversation piece, and that will stop people in their tracks from talking about how Donald Trump is going to save the world or how Hillary Clinton is really a good person. So when you start talking about the Trumpets of Gabriel, everyone will stop talking and go, what? Where did you hear that? Here's another one. This is one of my favorites, and you've heard me talk about this before. Oh my God, it's not climate change causing all this. It's Planet X. That will stop the conversation. And then you can explain what Planet X is. And here again, go on YouTube and search for Planet X or Nibiru, and you will get every video ever made. And there are hundreds of them, and you'll be entertained for hours watching these videos about how there's another planet on an elliptical orbit. By the way, astrophysically impossible, that is coming into our galaxy, into our solar system, is going to disrupt everything, eventually causing an axis shift. And if you are on the equator, you will be in Minnesota, you know, climate-wise. And if you're in Minnesota, you'll be in the Arctic. And if you're in, in the Arctic, you'll be on the equator. It's nuts. But it's a conversation stopper. Here's one I just found that I love. Here's what you do, and this is how you introduce this topic. You go, hey, is it the Berenstain Bears or the Berenstain Bears? And then this will lead into a discussion of something called the Mandela effect, or displaced reality, or reality manipulation, or something to that effect. And that is a thing called the Mandela effect, where everyone seemed to remember that Nelson Mandela died a few years before he did, or that it was the Berenstain Bears when it was in fact the Berenstain Bears. And the Mandela effect, once again, also has just tons of videos, and people, you know, that will cause people to, you know, just be like, what? What are you talking about? That's a good half hour of conversation right there. And then finally, you can say, hey, did you know that people actually think the world ended in 2012 and that we're living inside a computer? This is the nature of all the videos on YouTube that say we're actually living in the Matrix. And there's a ton of them. And there's all kinds of other ones. Paul is, you remember the Beatles? Paul is dead. Well, that went away, you know, after Wings, right? And before, and I thought it was dead and gone for good, but no, Paul is dead. The Paul is dead theory is back with all these videos explaining that they prove that Paul is dead. There's a whole bunch of ghost story videos you can pull up on YouTube and talk about. You can start talking about time travel. Where would you go? You know, that kind of thing. And finally, and this is pretty cool, actually. If there are people who are actually really old, I had one of the best Thanksgivings, and it may have been Christmas, but it was one of the best Christmases I ever had, and that was when I got some people, some of the older people in the family, all three of the brothers, the two brothers and the sister together, and, you know, the oldest was, I don't know, at that time he was probably 70 or so, the middle one was 68, and the youngest one was about 65, and, I started them talking about what it was like growing up on the farm and how hard it was and what kinds of things that they did. And I mean, they had great stories about snow coming in through the slats in the wall in the morning, and, you know, how the two boys handled sleeping in the same bed, and told stories about how much, you know, how great it was and the food that they ate. And this went on for like 2 hours. And I had never heard all three of them tell their stories like that. And it ended up being great. So if you can get, you know, Aunt Joan and, you know, Uncle, you know, Sven and whoever to sit there, and if they're old enough, and tell their stories, you know, it'll be great and really educational for other people. And then finally, you can go sit at the kids' table. That's another thing that's fun to do, is to just say, you know, I'm going to go sit at the kids' table and hang out with the 8-year-olds, because they're way more fun than you people. You can do that too. Well, that was a little bit longer of a podcast, and I hadn't intended to make this one this long, but we are into the holiday season, and I probably only have one more podcast before Thanksgiving, and I may take a few days off as we head into December. So, and I have been experimenting with longer podcasts ever since the election season, just because there's been so much data and so much stuff to get it to. So if you like the longer podcasts, great. I prefer them to be about 30 minutes, so we'll be back to those at some point here. But thanks for listening, and thanks once again to Hydrus for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. It doesn't matter what you do for exercise, you can really benefit a lot from Hydrus, because you want to be hydrated no matter what you're doing. Hydrus is the new high-performance beverage that uses exclusive Nanosome technology to deliver critical electrolytes with unrivaled speed and effectiveness. They're using it in CrossFit, they're using it with wrestling, you know, tennis players, lifters, powerlifters, cyclists, and of course, crazy people like me that do yoga. HydrusPerformance.com. That's HydrusPerformance.com. HYDRUS. HydrusPerformance.com. Of course, if you are, you know, getting ready for the winter, you know, you do your gutters, you rake the leaves, and you should also have your heating checked and make sure everything's running right. And don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for reliable emergency service. Here's the number: 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems for 4 generations over in St. Paul, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And of course, last but not least, xgovernmentcars.com, Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. They're great. I love them. Now I have Mobile Podcast Command, which I love. I'm so attached to that vehicle. It's great. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of great reasons to check out xgovernmentcars.com, which of course is now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North. Check them out online or call them at 763-777-8782.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Now, one more thing I got to mention. I have to do a correction for Alpha Systems, because I've been talking about Alpha Systems and Lyft. The angle of attack indicator is, a visual indicator of the lift underneath your aircraft. And I was corrected by Mark Korn, the guy who runs Alpha Systems. And he said, make sure you tell people, and he's right, it's not the lift underneath your airplane. It's the amount of lift that's being produced by that wing. That is what is holding you up in the air. And the great thing about Alpha Systems is it gives you this visual indicator so that you know how much power to add when you're making that final turn to land, or in those short distances with takeoff and landings when things can get really dangerous if you don't have enough wing, the wing producing enough lift. Okay, I hope I got that right. But I want to be right about that, because I feel like an idiot when I screw up some aeronautic thing. So... Thank you so much for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast, the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast. Check them out. If you're a pilot, they want to get that into your plane because it helps pilots fly safe. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thank you guys for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn. We don't know what's up with TuneIn. I noticed the other night I went on and the feed's broken, so we're reloading the feed onto TuneIn, but nobody noticed it, so it must not be that big of a deal. Thanks for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, blogtalkradio.com, Instagram, and of course, I appreciate the donations at thebobdavispodcast.com for Mobile Podcast Command. Thank you for listening to this exceedingly long Thanksgiving podcast. I enjoyed doing it, and I'm sorry. I apologize to the general manager of the Bob Davis Podcast and any other family members that might be offended.
You've got a passion, got a passion. You've got a passion, got a passion. It's called peace, peace, peace. You've got a passion, got a passion. You've got a passion.